you've asked to have Carol listen here?
Yeah.
It's a good job. It's actually funny when you butcher the names.
Push the buttons.
Yeah. I didn't get a practice of
that. We're going to look at, just read verse 31. Okay?
Where are we at?
No, chapter 31, excuse me.
Chapter 31?
Yeah.
Oh.
Saul's going to be done.
The death of Saul?
Yes.
Now the Philistines were fighting against Israel, and the men of Israel fled before the Philistines and fell slain on Mount Gilboa. And the Philistines overtook Saul and his sons, and the Philistines struck down Jonathan and Abinadab, Malchishua, the sons of Saul. The battle pressed hard against Saul, and the archers found him, and he was badly wounded by the archers. Then Saul said to his armor-bearer, "Draw your sword and thrust me through with it, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and mistreat me." But his armor-bearer would not, for he feared greatly. Therefore Saul took his own sword and fell upon it. And when his armor-bearer saw that Saul was dead, he also fell upon his sword and died with him. Thus Saul died, and his three sons, and his armor-bearer, and all his men, on the same day together. And when the men of Israel who were on the other side of the valley and those beyond the Jordan saw the men of Israel had fled and that Saul and his sons were dead, they abandoned their cities and fled. And the Philistines came and lived in them. And the next day, when the Philistines came to strip the slain, they found Saul and his three sons fallen on Mount Gilboa. So they cut off his head and stripped off his armor, and sent messengers throughout the land of the Philistines to carry the good news to the house of their idols and to the people. They put his armor in the temple of Ashtaroth, and they fastened his body to the wall of Bethshan. But when the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead heard what the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men arose and went all night and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall of Bethshan, and they came to Jabesh and burned them there. And they took their bones and buried them under the tamarisk tree in Jabesh and fasted 7 days. Sounds kind of bloody.
Mm-hmm. Any questions about that?
I just know that in the next chapters to come, they certainly have a lot of guys that are coming up with how Saul died,
mm-hmm.
but this is the true account.
Yeah, the true account.
That he killed himself.
Yeah, he didn't, should have fought to the end, right? Or surrendered. It's not, it wasn't really an act of heroism.
No, it's
fear
and himself.
Suicide. Mm-hmm. Killed himself. Okay.
Well, it matched his personality where he was not brave. He was.
Yes.
He was always scared. Lived in fear.
It's not a way to live.
They just said there's parallelism between the death of Saul and the death of Goliath. The giant champion of Philistines had his head cut off by David, and the Philistines fled. The Philistines take revenge and done likewise to the giant champion of Israel, King Saul, who was taller than any of the people from his shoulders up. Interesting. I never thought of that correlation. A symbolic one, because I think of, was it the Aztecs? They used to cut the heads off and they become kick poles.
Gross.
Okay. Verses 1 through 16. 16.
Oh, stole heads. After the death of Saul, when David had returned from striking down the Amalekites, David remained 2 days in Ziklag. And on the third day, behold, a man came from Saul's camp, with his clothes torn and dirt on his head. And when he came to David, he fell to the ground and paid homage. David said to him, "Where do you come from?" And he said to him, "I have escaped from the camp of Israel." And David said to him, "How did it go? Tell me." And he answered, "The people fled from the battle, and also many of the people have fallen and are dead. And Saul and his son Jonathan are also dead." Then David said to the young man who told him, "How do you know that Saul and his son Jonathan are dead?" And the young man who told him said, "By chance I happened to be on Mount Gilboa, and there was Saul leaning on his spear, and behold, the chariots and the horsemen were close upon him. And when he looked behind him, he saw me and called to me. And I answered, "Here I am." And he said to me, "Who are you?" I answered him, "I am an Amalekite." And he said to me, "Stand beside me and kill me, for anguish has seized me, and yet my life still lingers." So I stood behind him, or I stood beside him and killed him, because I was sure that he could not live after he had fallen. And I took the crown that was on his head and the armlet that was on his arm, and I have brought them here to my lord. Then David took hold of his clothes and tore them, and so did all the men who were with him. And they mourned and wept and fasted until evening for Saul and for Jonathan his son, and for the people of the Lord and for the house of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword. And David said to the young man who told him, "Where do you come from?" And he answered, "I am the son of a sojourner, an Amalekite." David said to him, "How is it you are not afraid to put out your hand to destroy the Lord's anointed?" Then David called one of the young men and said, "Go execute him." And he struck him down so that he died. And David said to him, "Your blood be on your head, for your own mouth has testified against you, saying, 'I have killed the Lord's anointed.'"
Okay. So, why was this man killed?
Lied.
Did he lie?
He did lie,
because we know that Saul was dead before that. Okay. He lied, but David wouldn't have known that.
No, I wonder if he thought he was going to get a reward.
Yeah, probably something like that.
He's of the wrong tribe.
But he's the Lord's anointed.
He's of the wrong tribe. That's one of the first points. He was what?
Mm. He was in
Malachi. Who was supposed to eliminate that?
Saul.
Well, actually, before that, Israel, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. He confessed to the murder, which we know that he didn't do. Why would he confess to the murder, though?
To gain favor.
It says here in my notes that the Amalekite claimed responsibility for Saul's death, saying that Saul was still alive and found him, whoever, 1 Samuel 31, 3 through 6, makes it clear that Saul died by falling on his own sword, not by the hand of the Amalekite. Thus, this man, who may have witnessed Saul's suicide, claimed to have killed Saul, and in reality, he had only reached his body before the Philistines, and had fabricated the story to ingratiate himself with the new king by killing his enemy, and by bringing Saul's crown and bracelet to David. The crown and bracelet in the hands of Amalekite show that he was the first to pass by the body of Saul.
He obviously didn't know David
at
all.
I was just going to say, he didn't know David very well.
Well, he did, because he was an Amalekite. He would have never
known. Right.
The other thing that he did, that it appears that he took advantage of the situation and was rejoicing in the death of who he thought was David's enemy, Saul, which he was, in a sense, an enemy of David. But is that the heart of David? No.
I mean, he wouldn't even kill him himself, so why did he think he would rejoice in it?
Who was this person? I'll give you this little nugget here. Tradition of Jews say he is the son of Doeg, the Edomite.
Oh, okay.
You know who that is?
The one that had killed, slaughtered the priest.
Yeah, Saul's armor bearer.
First
Samuel 22:18. That's what the Jewish tradition says, okay?
Interesting.
The other thing is, that was Saul's armor bearer, Doeg the Edomite. Now, perhaps Doeg gave the crown bracelet to his son to earn favor in David's eyes, if that was indeed the case. What was the one fear? This is the irony of Saul's death. What was his fear?
You mean at the point of death?
Well, yeah, and afterwards.
He's afraid they're going to mutilate him, basically.
Make sport of him.
Yeah. Boy, didn't they.
So what does he do?
Hit him.
And what did he do with his body?
Hit him on a wall.
To make sport of him.
Yep.
Yeah. He just didn't want to be alive when he did it.
Got it. What is David's reaction?
Mourn, sadness. Oh, to this guy?
No, to all of it.
Oh, he was sad. Mourned.
Yeah, he lamented. Mourned, wept.
Well, we had a nice
for 7 days.
About it.
Turn to Psalm 24, verses 17 and 18.
Psalm 24. Mm-hmm.
There's not 17. No.
Never mind. Psalm, put the wrong one down here. What's Psalm 24 say?
Psalm, King of Glory.
Only has 10.
Earth is the Lord's name.
Be blessed. Be here.
It doesn't matter. Anyways, he laments his death, as you can see there. We'll get to that. So that brings us to a question that is hard for us. And I want you to see that God said from the very beginning, I've rejected you, Saul. I've chosen a man after my own heart. Now, what makes David a man after God's own heart?
What makes him?
What has he said about David? So far, what have we seen in David that would, you know, make him say, this is a man after my own heart?
Well, he was
he's quick to repent.
He's humble. What else?
I mean, through the Lord.
Through the Lord.
He studied from his word.
Second word.
He praised him. He saw him. But there, he's also filled with the Spirit. He sought the Lord to be his strength.
I think you see that he's a man after God's own heart in the sense that we are by nature enemies of God. And how does God treat us?
Good.
Well,
better than
we deserve.
He died for us, right?
Yes.
Made a way for us.
Grace.
Long-term relationship, loves us, forgives us.
Mercy.
Grace, mercy, all that. Okay. Those are things that you do not see in Saul, right? But you certainly see it in David. He is mourning over a man who did what to him?
Tried to kill him. Tried to kill him numerous times.
Lied about him.
Hated
took his
him.
Wife away, his family,
yeah.
In the relationship. I mean, so much hardship. Funded for years, all because of Saul. I think he mourned over his death. Pray for your enemies.
Yes.
Okay. Anything else?
Well, he lost his friend too, though.
Okay.
I mean, Jonathan, he lost his friend.
Let's turn to 1 Chronicles 12, would we? Similar, because David and Ziklag, remember?
Did you say 1 Chronicles?
Yeah. and read this to you. Now these are the ones who came to David at Ziklag. So there are people that are coming to David at Ziklag, and this is exactly where he is now. Okay? While he was still restricted because of Saul, the son of Kish. That they were among the mighty men who helped him in war. This is who God provides for him during this time. They were equipped with bows, using both the right hand and the left to sling stone and to shoot arrows from the bow. They were Saul's kinsmen from Benjamin. So now Saul's kinsmen from Benjamin are aligning with who?
David.
The chief was Ahiezer, then Joash, sons of Shema, the Gibeathite, Jezeel, Pelet. Pelet, or PLT, is the son of Peloton. That was a joke. You guys received that. Peloton machine.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Good.
I got to do some humor because these names are like so hard to say. The sons of Azmaveth, okay, and Barakah, and Jehu, the Anathothite, and Ishmaiah, the Gibeonite, a mighty man among the 30 and over the 30. Then Jeremiah, Jehaziel, Johanan, Jozabad, and Gadarathite. All those names, okay? And the Gadites there came over to David in a stronghold in the wilderness, mighty men of valor, men trained for war, who could handle shield and spear, and whose faces were like the faces of lions. What does that mean?
Fierce.
Fierce.
They're hairy, I guess. And they were swift as the gazelles on the mountains. Ezer was the first, Obadiah the second, Eliab the third, Mishmana the fourth, Jeremiah, Atai, Eliel, Jehiel. These of the sons of God were captains of the army. He who was least, look at this, was equal to 100. So in other words, that one person, that special man, could take on 100 men. Okay? And the greatest one could take on 1,000. These are the ones who crossed the Jordan in the first month when it was overflowing with all its banks. And they put to flight all those in the valleys, both to the east and to the west. Then some of the sons of Benjamin and Judah came to the stronghold to David. David went up to meet them and said to them, "If you come peacefully to help me, my heart shall be united with you. But if you betray me to my adversaries, since there's no wrong in my hands, may the God of our fathers look on it and decide." The spirit came upon Amasai, who was the chief of the 30. So this guy's a stud. He said, "We're yours, O David, and with you, O son of Jesse, peace to you, and peace to him who helps you. Indeed, your God helps you." And David received them and made them captains of the band. From Manasseh also some defected to David, and was about to go to battle with the Philistines against Saul. We've already read about that. But they did not help them, for the Lord of the Philistines, after consultation, sent them away, saying, "At the cost of our heads, we defect to his master Saul." As he went to Ziklag, which is where he is now, there defected to him from Manasseh, Adnah, Jozabad, Jediel, Michael, normal name, thank you, Lord, Elihu, so they have captains of thousands who belonged to Manasseh. They helped David against the band of raiders. We know what happened there, right? For they were all mighty men of valor, and they were captains in the army. For day by day, men came to David to help him until there was a great army like the army of God. All this is happening right around the time of whose death?
Saul's.
What is God doing?
Building David up.
He's building him up. It's the next step. And the point here is, again, knowing the entire Bible is always helpful, that where God calls, he will provide. Okay? He's providing men for David, preparing them for the next. What were they going to do? David didn't build, but what were they going to do? They were going to take that kingdom, and they were going to
expand.
Yeah, and that was going to require military might, men. Okay? 17 to 27, David's lament for Saul and Jonathan.
David lamented with this lamentation over Saul and Jonathan his son, and he said it should be taught to the people of Judah. Behold, it is written in the book of Jashar, he said, "Your glory, O Israel, is slain on your high places. How the mighty have fallen. Tell it not in Gath, publish it not in the streets of Ashkelon, lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised exult. Your mountains of Gilboa, let there be no dew or rain upon you, nor fields of offerings. For there the shield of the mighty was defiled, the shield of Saul, not anointed with oil. From the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan turned not back, and the sword of Saul returned not empty. Saul and Jonathan, beloved and lovely, in life and in death they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. Your daughters of Israel weep over Saul, who clothed you luxuriously in scarlet, who put ornaments of gold on your apparel. How the mighty have fallen in the midst of the battle. Jonathan lies slain on your high places. I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant you have been to me. Your love to me was extraordinary, surpassing the love of women. How the mighty have fallen, and the weapons of war perished."
Okay, now, I think you take a few minutes and just write down what David said about Saul and about Jonathan. What did you guys find out? What did he say about Saul? It'd be interesting to see if you get the first one. First point. You have 10 minutes, so I need you to answer now. Don't do the fifth grade thing I did. Ask a question, look down, and answer the question.
What did David thought of him? Saul is the mighty.
Okay, mighty? Good.
They were beloved and lovely.
Is that true?
Jonathan was, but not Saul.
There's some people that beloved him. Beloved his son, but yeah.
Well, Saul was okay when he was in his right mind.
Was he?
What else to say about Saul?
David
on him. Okay.
As well.
Okay.
His sword never
returned to me. Provides the nation that I don't know. What do you say about Jonathan?
His love was more wonderful than the love of women.
Okay. His friend, close friend. What else?
That he and his father weren't divided.
Okay. The very first phrase in verse 18, your beauty of Israel, is a reference to Jonathan. Because the word there, beauty, refers to, it's literally the gazelle or antelope of Israel. That would have been a reference to Jonathan. Okay? A gazelle or antelope is the chosen symbol of youthful elegance. So they think it's referring to Jonathan. Mm-hmm. So this lament, this dirge, starts with Jonathan, verse 19. How does it end? It ends with who?
Jonathan.
Okay. But again, he is, and we think he's genuine about this, obviously, but he's literally weeping, lamenting the death of his enemy. Okay, the first seven verses of chapter 2.
After this, David inquired of the Lord, "Shall I go up into any of the cities of Judah?" And the Lord said to him, "Go up." David said, "To which shall I go up?" And he said, "To Hebron." So David went up there, and his two wives also, Ahinoam of Jezreel and Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. And David brought up his men who were with him, and everyone with his household, and they lived in the towns of Hebron. And the men of Judah came, and they anointed David king over the house of Judah. When they told David it was the men of Jabesh Gilead who buried Saul, David sent messengers to the men of Jabesh Gilead and said to them, "May you be blessed by the Lord, because you showed this loyalty to Saul your Lord and buried him. Now may the Lord show steadfast love and faithfulness to you, and I will do good to you because you have done this thing. Now therefore let your hands be strong and be valiant, for Saul your Lord is dead, and the house of Judah has anointed me king over them."
Stand out there as you read that. What stands out to you as you read that, those verses? What can David do now for the first time in his life?
This is a big family.
He can have a house, a home, a place.
What else? He can walk around Israel now.
He can be seen. He's not behind the gates.
Not fear of, you know, Saul. But he does have, he can't be completely comfortable because why?
He's king.
Well, he's king, and also Saul does have people that are going to be loyal to him. They would take a cheap shot to take him out. Who would be loyal to him?
Pardon?
Who would be loyal to Saul? Family. And they would seek, potentially seek, the life of the new king because they were a threat to the throne. Okay?
And he's still only talking good of Saul.
Yes.
He's not, you know, he's not saying bad stuff about him now that he's gone or.
That's a great point. I wrote down here. Look at chapter or verses, chapter 2, verse 10, 11. Ishbeth, Saul's son, was 40 years old when he became king of Israel with David. He was king for 2 years. The house of Judah, however, followed David. The time that David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah was 7 years and 6 months. Now, all that being said is you are now legitimately the king over all Israel. But he doesn't take over all of Israel. Why? The waiting period.
Got to be a cooling off for Saul's family. And there's got to be a determination as to who is going to take over instead of Israel. They have that battle with that pond or water.
So, if he is there for about 7 years, and he was on the run after being anointed king for, we think, roughly 13 years, the fulfillment of the promise to be king over all of Israel was a total of 20 years. Hmm. So, if he was like 15 or 13 or 18 up there around, he was in his mid to late 30s before he became king. And he walked in faith in the promise of God for 13 hard years and a total of 20 years before the fulfillment of that promise. Hmm. So obviously there's a little bit of lesson here that we need to learn to what?
Wait.
Way more days.
Wait. You know, you think you're waiting when it's like a month or a week or
yeah.
Not 13 years.
Wait. I have to wait at a stop red light. It drives me nuts.
Oh, driving to work like that.
Yeah.
Patient. Well, and he didn't find the need. I mean, the 7 years, it seems like he didn't find the need to take over everything, you know, to be in a hurry to take over everything all at once.
Yeah.
That can backfire on you.
It wasn't arrogant.
But yeah. That's what makes him more like God.
So I want you to see it. We'll close out here. We see how he is an imperfect human being. He's a normal guy, right? But in his sinful state, in his depraved condition, he still is, to the eyes of God, very close to the Lord, a man after God's own heart. Okay. And I want you to start to see the traits of him that make him a man after God's own heart, because it's contrasted, whoever wrote 1st and 2nd Samuel, it's contrasted up to this point to Saul. He is the exact opposite. Any questions? Any comments? We close in prayer. This is a free-for-all to make fun of Don and Carol since they're not here. So you can do that if you want.
Well, they
left
today.
We'll edit it out.
Are you jealous of them at all? I'm not, no.
They should be happy.
Hold them.